Donald in a Kitchen talks about food. Donald in a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here in the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. And I wish to report there is some moisture falling from the sky.
Oh, and taking all of the pollen out of the air. Oh, my goodness.
We've been hoping for rain, so here we are, middle of April, and boy, it looks like it's coming down. Good. I think everything's going to green up quite nicely.
Well, I have to say, how much ever we get, it won't be enough to suit your farmer husband.
Oh, that's true. You just can't do anything right. You know, rain. Wrong thing at the wrong time. But well, no.
More. We want more water.
And then it'll be too much. We'll see. Well, today on the Donald in a Kitchen, we're going to talk about spring and foraging and eating and books. We've run across a lot of good books lately, and a lot of them have to do with food, of course. So we'll be sharing that. We're going to be talking about wild green things today, things that come up early, and brown bread. So green things and brown bread.
Well, I have to say, you know, this time of year, after everything has been so dead for so long, the first things that come up are quite exciting.
Yes. Gotta take your pleasures by kind of looking down to your feet and off into the woods or off the sidewalk, because there are things that are starting to grow. Daffodils and all the usual, all the things that we planted on purpose. But there's a lot of things that we didn't plant on purpose, things that have been here before.
Weeds.
Before we've been here, weeds will grow, but so much of that stuff...
Edible weeds.
...is edible, and besides all the pretty flowers, I mean, the scilla have actually come and gone, and...
Which one is scilla? The tiny little white one?
Tiny little blue ones.
Oh, blue. Huh. Right, the very first ones.
That's very first. Okay. Now, scillas. And actually, I had some that came up white. Evidently, you know, there's genetic variations in there, but scilla pretty much is a wonderful ground cover, and rue anemones going absolutely bonkers in my woods. I can't wait to see what happens after the rain. It'll be nice, real nice. Well, one of the first things that we kind of check each other's yards out, and Donna always excited when the motherwort shows up.
Well, it's one of the first things that noticeably pops up in clumps here and there.
And we sort of have a tradition here on the Donald in a Kitchen. We know it's spring when the motherwort shows up, and we've been doing this for quite a while. And along with that tradition, we're going to dip into the archives for a bit about this early spring herb. We talked to Ava Chin. She's an author. And she wrote a book a long time ago, and we interviewed her a long time ago, actually 2014, believe it or not, on Donald in a Kitchen, when we still didn't quite know what we were doing back then.
Oh, gee.
Anyway, she was a wonderful guest. She wrote a book called...
She lives in New York City.
Yes. Right. She wrote a book called Eating Wildly, Foraging for Life, Love, and the Perfect Meal. And believe it or not... She lives in New York City, and she forages in Central Park, of all places.
Oh, in Staten Island, all over the place. Yeah, she's an intrepid forager.
Intrepid. It was fun to talk to her. So let's listen to that bit of audio.
Welcome to Ames, Ava.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us about motherwort.
Sure, absolutely. So, I've written about it for the book.
Quite
I can
a
read
bit.
A little section from it if
and
you
I
like.
And I would say they're really pretty too.
It's very pretty. It's a very distinct colored leaf. It's almost slightly fuzzy.
Yeah, and kind of ruffly, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's a member of the mint family. It's got a square-shaped stem,
mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite plants. When you first taste it, it can be extremely bitter. right? But it's known as being a nervine, so it's like kind of calms your nerves.
Oh, just what we need.
That's right. That's right. So if you know you're kind of a high-strung type A personality, maybe you need a little bit of motherwort in your life.
Or so, if you're overly tired mother or grandmother.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So this is a section. I first discovered motherwort growing in the wild in Boulder, Colorado. I had gone on a foraging walk with their esteemed forager, Bridget Mars. Ah. And I was so thrilled to actually see it in the wild. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs. The leaves were shaped like a lion's tail, and I thought about the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz, combing the end of his tail between his paws. I rubbed a leaf between my fingers. The motherwort was less fuzzy than the common mallow and smelled like my grandfather's desk drawer, a repository for curios and odd mementos, pressed handkerchiefs embroidered with someone else's initials, buffalo nickels, an old extracted tooth. I'd first learned of Leonoris cardiaca from a Chinese doctor in Brooklyn who recommended it for women's issues like hormonal imbalances and spot bleeding. In Old English, wort means plant, and I love the idea of a mothering plant that could aid my feminine issues and calm my nerves. According to David Hoffman's The Herbal Handbook, motherwort was used for menstrual conditions as a relaxant during menopause and as a tonic for the heart. Back then, I tried the herb in pill form and found it extremely dry and bitter. I had to drink an entire glass of water in order to get it down. Because of the taste, I had never taken it on a regular basis, and so couldn't confirm whether or not it worked. But here it was, alive and thriving in the middle of downtown Boulder. And apparently in your yard.
Yes, lots of it. Is it something I can dry also for?
Yes, but how I like to take it is to dry it first and then make a tincture out of it. So you kind of...
Alcohol, glycerin?
Alcohol. Uh-huh. A combination of, like, your highest proof alcohol you can get your hands on. For me, that's just a...
We have plenty of white lightning here in Iowa.
You can use that mm-hmm. and a little bit of water. Mm-hmm. And you shake it. Shake it every day mm-hmm. For about a month, and then you'll get a tincture. And it's a lot easier to my palate than to drink it as a tea because it is so bitter. So there's something nice about taking a shot of it.
It's not tasting bitter yet. Do you suppose it's because it's so young and fresh?
I don't know. I've had it pretty young. I found it pretty bitter. That maybe you're just, you enjoy it so much.
I do. We've been pushing the bitters because that's the underdeveloped flavor of the American palate.
Right.
And also it's very helpful in aiding digestion.
But that was a little talk with Ava Chin, author of the book Eating Wildly. Motherwort.
And there is of course, I have it all over my yard. It's the plant in the fall. It sticks up these spikes and makes those little seeds that stick to your trousers when you walk through the woods and are really annoying to pick out or into the dog's fur and things like that. So if you get those seeds, you'll know there's some motherwort nearby. There is a lot of it in the woods around here.
It's a nice plant. And remembering that the word wart on the end of a name of a plant means plant. It's mother wort, mother plant. Very good. Very good. Other stuff, other wild green things that are up now. Bluebells and nettles. And I have a very intrepid partner. My husband, Joe, gets all excited with the first greens in the woods. And he doesn't just pick bluebells for the flowers or anything like that. He brought back a big bunch of bluebells, and we ate them. It's very good. Bluebells are
well, they are early beautiful. Rooms. They have the flowers have two different colors of purple in them.
When they're just very, very new, they're very pinkish, but then they turn very blue, and they carpet our woods. They used to only be in one place, but I think they must spread by seed because they are all over the place. They stand about, 2 foot tall.
So what does Joe do? Just saute them up like spinach? I mean, mm-hmm. it's got the leaves, the stems, the flowers, the whole thing.
the flowers and everything. Although you don't want the flowers to be too dry or too old, because then the stem gets woody. But the whole thing is very edible.
Right now is the
right
time.
Right now. Okay. And don't worry, because usually if you find bluebells, there are usually lots of them. Mm-hmm. When you talk about foraging for things, I always want to remember you don't take everything. But bluebells really do spread quite well by themselves. So kind of pick from here and there so you leave some patches. We had some last week, just steamed. Think of skinny asparagus. So, you know, steam them. And Joe's go-to for serving them, a little lemon, a little olive oil, and he put some crushed walnuts on the top. It was pretty darn good. He's big on walnuts. Yeah.
Me, I would do butter, salt, and pepper, you know.
Oh, well, butter, salt, and pepper, too. Yes, he does. Oh, good. And then nettles. We've talked about nettles.
Oh, nettles. The glorious thing about nettles when they come up this time of the year, which is major pollen allergy season, is nettles are a great relief for allergies. So, I mean, you can go out and pick your own. Well, picking your nettles, right? They do sting, so you have to wear gloves.
Don't try to macho your way through. But it's not like poison ivy. The sting doesn't last forever, but why make it hard?
You know, there is an old thing if you have arthritis, for example, in your hands, you kind of wrap them with a little stinging nettles, and the sting is supposed to diminish the pain.
Yeah, it's not a horrible sting.
It's itchy.
It's stimulating.
Yeah, so, very stimulating, right? So picking them, you can, if you douse them in boiling water just for a couple seconds,
yes,
that takes the sting off of them, and then you can chop them up and eat them, or you can, of course, make teas out of them, make tinctures out of them.
On a past Dinalana Kitchen, and I don't remember which, but it's in my brain someplace, we talked about nettle salad. Actually, you can eat nettles raw, but get this, folks, you have to break down the leaf membrane.
I remember talking about that. How do you do it? The best way
to do that is lay them on the counter and roll them with a rolling pin. Squash them.
Oh, I sort of remember that show. And that means you don't have to put them in boiling water first?
Then you can have a salad, because we had that too, with a little dressing on
it.
Well,
weren't we clever? And I don't remember it at all. So
so clever, and the rolling pin works great. You want to break down
those must be the really fresh first of the...
Yeah, and when you're picking nettles, this is the time, the early nettles. They get kind of...
Oh, they get chewy, like most things.
And nettles are among the foods that make fantastic additions to stock. And
good idea.
And putting it in boiling water gets rid of all the sting.
I know they're quite nutritive. I can't quite. Yep. Does it say in that book what they do?
What they do?
Well, or I know they have a lot of nutrition in them, but I can't quite remember what it was. Oh, well, they're good for you. That's all you need to know. They're good for you.
They are.
And they have, they don't have a...
They've got lots of minerals in them, for one.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
They don't have a very super strong flavor.
No, they're a green.
They're mild.
And again, thanks to Husband Joe for adding them to a very nice soup. They did really well this.
That's right. He brought me some. It was with your dried tomatoes.
Yeah,
and it was actually thick enough that I put it on pasta.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. Lana, what's this book that we're referring to now?
Don got a good book for a present. Tell them about
Christmas.
This wonderful book.
It's called Midwest Medicinal Plants. Identify, harvest, Midwest, right? So that means we're going to have access to all of these things. Identify, harvest, and use 109 wild herbs for health and wellness. Lisa M. Rose. It has really good pictures and, really, it's sort of like having a bird identification book, only it's herbs.
And it's nice to have one that is so Midwest-centered. It's nice to check up on things. And Donna told me about this book, and she says, oh, it's got Creeping Charlie in it. And so I get the book and look into the table of contents and look for Creeping. Well, I didn't find any Creeping, nor did I find Charlie. Other people do not call Creeping Charlie Creeping Charlie.
It has a fancier name. What's it called?
Usually it's called Ground Ivy. And
Ground Ivy.
That's what it was under. And there's a whole page of it. It's called Creeping. It could be called Creeping Charlie or Gill Over the Ground. I've never heard it called. Gill Over the Ground. It must be.
Gill Over the Ground. Okay. We have everywhere. Yeah. And Lana and I, we've talked about it is the bane of our existence if you're trying to have a lawn, and especially if you don't want to use chemicals. It's just takes over. But this time of the year, it's kind of pretty.
Right.
Has little deep purple flowers.
I do not mind it in my lawn. I do mind it in my garden because it is quite invasive. So this is a good time of year to see those little blue, purpley flowers and the ground ivy leaves and pull them out.
There's a trick with it, too. Mm-hmm. Like we're having rain today. After the rain is the great time to pull it because it gets really loose and it just comes out because it kind of has runners and stuff. So when the ground is wet or still moist, you can just pull clumps of it out as mm-hmm. opposed to having to, like, it's been so dry here that I haven't even bothered to try to pull the Creeping Charlie because it's tedious.
Oh, yeah.
But once it's wet, then it's kind of fun, you know, crawling around on your knees with the soggy, you know, your kneecaps are all wet and brown. And
since this book is called Midwest Medicinal Plants by Lisa M. Rose.
Right. We found out that Creeping Charlie has a use.
It does. It does. It does not dry well. It's in the mint family. It does not dry well, so it doesn't taste like much. If anything, it's bitter. But it is very helpful in alleviating head and throat congestion. You can make a hot tea out of it.
So that might be good with nettles for allergies, too, then.
And she's, this is one nice thing about this book. It tells about you can kind of just mix things and make a nice ground ivy tea. You can mix it with equal parts of goldenrod, nettles, or New England asters to stop runny nose.
Okay, well, this time of year, we just have the nettles. It's, thank goodness, too early for goldenrod or asters.
Yeah,
we've got plenty of nettles and creeping charlie. Wait, now what was the ground ivy? Ground ivy. Okay.
Gill over the ground.
Oh boy, that's fancy.
And one note, notice that there's a note on many of the plants in here. She mentions that these medicinal herbs are they are hardy. They suck up things from around their environment, so be careful. Be mindful of where you are harvesting. Probably not right next to a road or by a questionable dump of something, like a field that might have a lot of chemical sprays on it. That especially for things like dandelions and all that fun stuff that you can get. So kind of be careful where you are harvesting these things.
Well, I don't use chemicals in my lawn, probably much to the chagrin of all of my neighbors. So we have lots of Creeping Charlie and plenty of dandelions. And the part that's fenced, where all the neighborhood dogs don't do their thing, it's pretty clean. But, you know, out on the sidewalk part, it's not where I pick.
Yeah, right. kind of think about where these plants have been. So mm-hmm. find some healthy things. And many, many things are, you can make teas out of them. And, I don't know, relieving a stuffy nose sounds like a great thing.
Well, I mean, thank goodness in Ames we still have enough, like, open spaces, as they would call it in an urban environment. There's plenty of places that are quite safe for foraging. And Ames has lots of parks with enough space that I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
Right, right. Good. Anyway, even if you don't forage and eat this stuff yourself, be aware of all the good things that are growing, the wild green things. Oh, it has, I ran across something in this Midwest medicinal plant book that I'm not too familiar with, but I know you have one of these. Donna, tell us about linden.
Oh, she has linden. She also has alder, which I have too in the book. So I have a huge linden tree on that part of the part that belongs to the city, right? That you have to mow, but it belongs to the city, right? And they're not, it's too early yet, but probably in another month, when the linden blooms, there is no sweeter smell. It is just, you know, like if you ride around your bicycle at night in Old Town, you can go through these corridors where that smell will just hit you. It's like heavenly. It's just a wonderful smell. The flowers are really small. I don't gather them because the tree is huge. It's a big, big, big tree. And so you would have to kind of like lay a blanket under it when the flowers fall to catch it. And because it's in that part where all the dogs pee, I don't do that. So I don't really harvest from it, but the smell is wonderful. And so, you know, in about a month, if you smell something, it's sweet like honeysuckle, but it wafts at night, particularly even in the daytime, but it's quite glorious. And linden flower, you can buy it for it's an old lady's tea for years and years and years. And I don't know why, but I can remember I drank it during my first pregnancy for morning sickness. It was one of the few things I could just drink and it would stay down.
Very good.
So it's stuck in my brain for that use.
And it seems like, as opposed to the ground ivy, it is pleasant tasting.
Oh, it is. It has a light kind of flowery flavor. It's a beautiful, just, you know, go to Little Herb and downtown and buy some, I think. Oh, I'm sure she has
that's
it.
A way to do it.
Yeah.
Medicinal uses of the linden. Tea made with fresh or dry linden flowers and...
The flowers, yeah.
Is deliciously sweet and fragrant with a mild honey-like taste and a touch of jasmine flavor. The mild tea is wonderful for soothing the nerves. Ah, there you go. Fresh flowers can also be made into a simple syrup, and the syrup freezes well. Oh, you can use it in lemonade or as a cocktail ingredient.
Oh, my.
Ooh, lots of good things there. Oh, this is a great book. It is a great book.
Well, look up alder in the book. It's, I think, maybe the first one, because I in the front of my house, I have a not too old, maybe 15 years old alder tree, and it makes the one most wonderful, like right now, it has the, see those little tiny little pine coney looking things? And
oh,
then
that's
the
alder.
Long
okay.
catkins. So there are no leaves on it yet, but there are the long catkin kinds of things hanging down, and then the little nut things, which... As people would say, oh, it's a messy tree, but it is so charming. And of course, the squirrels love it. So I didn't realize it had medicinal qualities, though. What does it say about it?
All parts can be used for tea, help with sluggish digestion.
Huh?
It restores digestive processes, and with along with herbs such as burdock, yellow dock, or angelica.
The burdock is coming out now, too.
And it can be used topically for infections, huh?
Well, I bet my squirrels have excellent digestion.
I bet so, too. Because it can be used, be made into a massage, too. So all this stuff is just hanging there, messy
yeah.
trees or
well,
not.
Well, that one is right outside my bedroom window, and it's just pretty, especially this time of year. Pretty soon the leaves come, and then some years, what are those bugs that eat everything?
Oh, the Japanese beetle.
Yeah, the Japanese beetle. They love the alder tree. So,
oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
They do. Some years you just, you know, they practically denude it. But it's I don't know that it's that common around here. But
no, it's not because, see, you have all these species in your town yard that I do not have. Linden,
well, that one I actually bought it from Country Landscapes.
Whoa.
When I was, doing plantings in the yard. And I went, alder. Oh, I've read about that somewhere. That sounds very like something the druids were dancing around with or something. I think I'll take one of those. I really didn't know what I was doing, but that was a fortuitous pick. I really love it.
Great, great. You're listening to the Donalana Kitchen, and this is KHOI Community Radio, and Donalana Kitchen is tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. We're talking about wild green things that pop up and give us so much joy in the springtime. And we've been talking about the book Midwest Medicinal Plants by Lisa Rose. And, I have some dandelions blooming already.
So the word dandelion in French is called dent de lion, which is tooth of the lion. And all the parts are quite useful. Dandelion root is something you can, you know, dig up and pull out and dry and grind up and make an almost like coffee substitute. It's a lymphatic cleanser. If you know how to clean your lymph nodes, it's always a good thing, right? It's a building tonic herb. And this time of year, the smaller leaves, before it gets super bitter, are really good in salads.
Yeah, it is. There are cultivated dandelions that I grow. It's in the chicory family, believe it or not.
That's where the roots are good, too.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And the flowers. The flowers. I had a grandmother and a mother that made dandelion wine.
Oh!
It's a fuss. And picking enough dandelions to make dandelion wine.
Was that the children's job?
It's a good thing to be a kid. They'll set you down in a patch and you just pick.
So just the heads.
Just it.
And what did your mother and grandmother brew the heads in? How does it work?
Oh, good heavens, I remember. You have to take a lot of the green off the heads and then cover it with sugar, slices of lemon. I think that's it, and it has to brew for a couple months.
And it makes it...
In water, yeah.
Oh, so there's no alcohol involved.
No, it turns by itself, if everything is right. And that was always quite a treat in the fall, or saved for the Easter table, where a little shot glass of dandelion wine would
be... Oh, I have never tasted it. I mean, it's legendary,
but... It's very nice. I tried it once, and my bottles blew up all over the basement, so I didn't know.
Oh, I guess you're not supposed to cork it.
No, I didn't know too much about making dandelion wine, but I'll maybe try it again. That's good. Dandelions.
Yeah, it's one of those things you wished you'd asked your mother or your grandmother.
Yeah. We all have to pay attention, and we should. Eating wild green things. Very good. Well, let's move on to a different color here. I've been having fun doing a brown bread. Donna sent me a recipe from the New York Times a couple weeks ago.
Right, this was for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, right.
And it was from Darina Allen, who's kind of like well, the Julia Child of Ireland, basically. Yeah. A bit younger, and I love her work. So we did read it in the New York Times, but it was also in a book I have called Forgotten Skills of Cooking. The time-honored ways are the best, with over 700 recipes. It is a fabulous reference volume and has everything in it. It's kind of like The Joy of Cooking, only more beautiful.
It's got great pictures. And it's heavy. I carried it here to the studio this morning.
It's a big book.
It's a big book. So this is, I made the New York Times version. And now that I made it, then I made this brown bread just last night so I could bring it into the studio today. And
we're sharing it with you on the radio. Huh?
Yeah, well, here it is. I'll just hold it up. And it's a little loaf. Believe it or not, it is a yeast bread. And it is not a long rise at all. The longest rise is actually about 20 minutes. So this
is something any fool could make, right?
I'm not big on making yeast breads. I'm not very patient, I'm afraid. I love making quick breads. So this is made, it looks like a little quick bread. You make it in a little pan and everything. But, and it starts out with yeast mixed with what she calls treacle. And or molasses. I used
treacle and molasses are actually different things. But treacle is not, it's very British Isles. It's not something you can readily find here. In the New York Times, they substituted molasses.
Molasses there too.
Because this is the American edition.
This is the American version. But that molasses gets your yeast going.
Right, it's a sugar.
It's a sugar. So that and some warm water, and you let that on the counter until it foams a bit and it looks quite dramatic. It's fun to deal with yeast. And then mix that into 3.5 cups whole wheat flour or whole wheat white flour mix, 3.5 cups, and a teaspoon of salt. And she has a note here that mix it all at once so it doesn't lump, and I tried my best. After you have added, you add the yeast and water, mix that up, and then add a little bit more water, another cup, and mix it all at once. And so you have this very gooey, lumpy stuff, and she says, do not try to knead this. It is way too damp. So you just put it into a greased pan, and I used parchment paper to help me get it out of the pan. And you bake it in a hot oven. I covered the top with sesame seeds because that's what her picture showed. Add seeds if you like. And so I put it on top. And it's surprisingly long. You bake it in a hot oven for a while.
Because it's wet.
Wet. And there you go. But anyway, it rises up just fine. It's nice and dense. The New York Times version that I made, I don't know why, they probably had to edit it a little bit, had a little bit more liquid in it, and I like that a little better. This, her version that I made out of her book, maybe I did something wrong, but it's a little drier, but it's still lovely because the whole wheat flour is very good.
Right. You used the early morning harvest Iowa wheat flour, right?
I didn't have any Irish wheat flour.
No, well, but, you know, I mean, the advantages of using the local wheats, which we are very fortunate to have, is that they, you know, grains are plants. They have volatile oils. The longer they sit on the shelf, the more highly milled they have been, they get flatter and flatter in flavor. So using the early morning harvest flour, I always find, even when I use the pastry flours, like in cakes and stuff, it gives a little more fullness to the flavor. You can taste the difference. I mean, people like to use King Arthur and all of that, and those are standard and they work very well. But if you want a little more flavor, go for your local flours.
Always nice to eat close to home. I always have good luck with that. So I have this loaf sitting here. It's made in a 5x7 pan, and it got surprisingly long time to cook. Very hot oven for 20 minutes, and then turn it down a little bit to like 395 or 400, and then add some more. I was surprised. There's this little loaf in there just cooking away, and it does get brown and crunchy, and it's very good. Show a little variation on the side here. You can use them to make buns or little individual buns. And she also has a recipe for making a whole bunch at a time, starting with 14 cups of flour. But
She says, I think this was in the New York Times article, that so Dorina Allen has something, an establishment called the Ballymaloe Cooking School, which is really farm to table. It's a farm that was in her family, and she has turned this into quite an enterprise where people come for the restaurant, come for cooking classes. And so apparently this brown bread is the one that they make there at the Ballymaloe Cooking School on a daily basis to feed to all these people that are coming to see the wonders of Irish cooking. And so that means she's made a lot of it. So how to make 14 cups of stone ground whole wheat flour. Yes.
Makes about four or five loaves at a time.
So she probably makes a lot more than that on her. Right. Somebody helping her makes it.
She has staff.
I'm sure.
She has staff. Dorina Allen's book had things about wild foraging. She covers a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it's a wonderful reference book.
Yeah. And I was looking up comfrey, because comfrey is something that grows it's starting to
coming up
like
now, yeah.
And it does come up quite well. And comfrey comes up on my place quite well.
Wild though, I don't think. I planted mine.
Right, but it self seeds like crazy, or at least mine goes nuts. So I have lots of comfrey. You can use it medicinally. It's used for a lot of different things, although there's always a warning about ingesting comfrey. It's hard on livers. It is a healing plant, and it does a lot of good things for your insides, but you should not ingest a lot of it. However, yeah.
You know, I do remember doing some research on this because, I mean, I grew up, my little old-fashioned herbalist self learned comfrey very early. It's a wonderful herb. And then all of a sudden there were all these internet warnings of don't use comfrey, da 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 da. So I went, well, what the hell is going on here? And so it turns out that there are some varieties of comfrey. So if yours has little blue flowers, I think you're okay with it.
Ah, very good. It actually has been used for the word comfrey. It's a wound healer.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't that amazing?
Most of the things that we pick out of the garden are, you know, before pharmaceuticals, that's what we had. Nature's medicine cabinet, right?
There you go. Comfrey. Oh, now, comfrey is a lovely thing to have if you've got chickens to feed it to. And or, comfrey makes a wonderful wonderful compost tea for feeding your plants, because these big hairy leaves come in quantity. You can whack off
and they are hairy.
Whack off
fuzzy
tons
fuzzy.
Of them. Fuzzy fuzzy. And you can fill a 5-gallon bucket with them, just leaves. And I have already punched holes in the bucket. I actually used a drill bit with one of those hole driller things in there. So the bucket has holes in it. And then I put this 5-gallon bucket in another big container and cover it with water. That makes a wonderful fertilizer to side dress.
How long do you let it sit?
This is great. At least 2 weeks in the shade.
Okay.
And make sure it's covered. You may have to add more water. And you know it's ready because it starts fermenting. It will stink to high heaven. And oh, you say, oh boy, have I got a good bunch of compost tea then.
And then do the chickens eat the leaves when you take them out?
By the time they're done, it's pretty much slime.
Oh, but, really but dissolves
that, then. Just toss that on the plants mm-hmm. too.
Helen Gunderson is growing comfrey at the base of all of her fruit trees.
Oh, that's probably a good thing.
A good way to fertilize them, yeah.
And probably keep other weeds from going in.
Yeah, and I think it's a pretty plant in the garden.
Yes,
it has really big leaves, and it kind of grows up and up, and then it falls over because it's so heavy and kind of makes a big circular thing for each plant, and the leaves are as we said, hairy.
Yeah, hairy.
You know, the smaller leaves, I have seen recipes where the smaller leaves are crunched up and kind of cooked a bit like spinach, and then they're used to, like, stuff ravioli or something. They are not bitter at all.
Huh?
They, of course, have a lot of water in them. But the smaller leaves, once you kind of macerate them enough, just by chopping, they don't sting like nettles, but they have a funny texture. But once chopped up, they're kind of, I wouldn't call them sweet, but I guess they seem sweet because they're not bitter. So they're highly edible.
Yeah, very good, very good. So after you, if you're like me and you make 5 gallons of leaves at a time, you're going to end up with a lot of brownish, stinky, wonderful nettle tea to put on, or to comfrey, not nettle tea, comfrey tea to put, you can put nettles in too. You had this plant food. You can,
Could you put that in your house plants too,
yes,
or is
you
it too
can.
Stinky?
Don't use it straight. It's really kind of can be pretty strong.
Oh, really?
You can bottle this stuff and put it in a bottle or a milk jug or something, cover it, and store it in the shade. And this says dilute 10 parts water to 1 part comfrey. I'm not quite
that strong. Okay.
But I use that sort of thing on my houseplants.
Hey, it can't smell any worse than the fish emulsion that I use on my houseplants, okay?
No, it doesn't smell that bad.
Okay.
So if you're thinking of what to do with that comfrey that some friend gave you, and boy, it's growing in your garden, it really makes a nice fertilizer. If also you can, and I've done this, you can just break off those big leaves and lay them underneath a tomato plant, and they'll
compost down.
They'll compost by themselves. What a nice thing! All these things.
That must
growing.
Be why Helen plants them under her fruit trees.
That's it. It's already there. There you go. So good stuff growing this time of year. You're listening to KHOI. This is Community Radio. You can find out more about this fine radio station at www.khoifm.org. And you can support this radio station by becoming a member. There is information on that website. And you can find out more about the Donalana Kitchen there, too, and all the other fine programming. And Donna, while we're at it, tell folks how they can find the Donalana Kitchen podcast.
Oh, podcasts. Yes, they're the thing. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us there. Just Donalana, which is one word, Donalonna, second word, kitchen, and there we will be in your ears on demand.
Very good. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen.
We got one more spring plant to cover, and that is ramps. Have you seen any yet?
It's close. In my place that I always look, there is ramp-like things coming up.
Oh, and yes. I bet this rain will really give them a boost. So we do have them in the woods, and as Lana calls it, her ramp place.
Yeah, it's a ramp place.
There's a spot. Everybody has a spot that they know, and they usually don't tell anybody because ramps can be overpicked.
Yes.
They can.
It's like morel hunting people or trout fishermen, too.
Yep.
I think, oh, people can be pretty tight-lipped about
that. Well, the thing about ramps, because I found a place by the Skunk River. I'm not saying where on the Skunk River, but I do have a place that I can usually find. So what I have been doing for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years is I only take the leaves. Because, I mean, in a culinary sense, people really want the bulbs and the whole damn thing. But I'm satisfied with just the leaves. They have a wonderful flavor. And if you leave the bulbs, they keep on spreading. So, you know, I mean, if you pick a few bulbs, okay. But don't take all the bulbs, okay. And let them do their thing. There are people used to say, oh, you can't grow ramps, you can't farm them. But apparently that is not true. Thank goodness. They are, I mean, you know, chefs like Martha Stewart and Rachel Ray talk about ramps all the time. They do cost about $40 a pound, so it must be lucrative. So they're not very many ramp farmers. And the problem is the seeds are really, really small, and producing a harvestable bulb from the seed takes at least 5 years and closer to seven. So it is a, it would be a long-term investment for a farmer. That the good news about ramp farming is, they grow really densely. So this one ramp farmer talks, he says, I can fit a couple of years supply in my little 1/10 of an acre shade garden because they can be planted so densely. He says, you'll see them in clumps in the forest where there can be 40, 50, or 60 ramps growing in one square foot. Imagine an acre of that. So some patient farmers somewhere are growing them so that probably at exclusive grocery stores, although I have seen them at Wheatsfield some years.
Oh, I have too. So it's a good thing. It's a taste of spring.
And it is. As we'll say, a growing market.
Yes,
there's more
is.
And more of them. They are delicious.
Yeah. So think about the 5 years to get a crop, but think about fruit trees take a long time. And remember, they are in the shade. This is a forest floor thing. You have to think a little differently about this crop.
So I suppose if you're growing them in that density, you can thin them and they'll keep growing. Yeah. I mean, because it's not a perennial like growing an orchard or anything. Once you pick the bulb, that's it.
Right, but the bulbs do expand. I mean,
you get more bulbs from
more
the bulbs.
Yeah.
But once that particular bulb is gone, but unlike if you're just clipping the tops, they'll keep growing and the bulb will remain intact.
Yes. Good. Ramps. We've been dealing with some interesting books today. We had a good book. Oh, Donna and I are always sharing books. And I have a book of poetry that I've been enjoying. Remember Amanda Gorman? She was the...
Oh, she was that beautiful young woman at the last inauguration, right?
At the 2021
right.
president.
She had this gorgeous red turban hat and I think a beautiful yellow dress or something. I mean, she was just stunning. Like a flower herself.
So she wrote a poem and read it called The Hill We Climb at the 2021 presidential inauguration. And we were all pretty impressed with that.
She and Lady Gaga were there, I believe, right?
Very good. Right. The phrase, The Hill We Climb, it mentions in here that it was from a speech by Alexander Hamilton about democracy. And she has put out a book here, and she's done a lot of research and writing about our time with COVID, and she goes back to the Spanish flu and other national health emergencies and how we kind of help each other along.
But what's the name of the book, Lana?
The book is called Poems, Call Us What We Carry. Now, in between all this interesting stuff about people dealing with the our national health and our national democracy and all that sort of thing, I ran across a book about, or ran across a poem in here about microbes. In the past Donna-Lana Kitchen, we talked about the microbiome of cows. And we also have a microbiome.
Yes, the human microbiome, yeah. That's what we're feeding with all these herbs, right?
That's right. Anyway, this is an interesting little poem on what we have growing along with us. The poem is called Call Us. Grant us this day bruising the make of us. At times, over half of our bodies are not our own. Our persons made vessel for non-human cells. To them, we are a boat of being, essential, a country, a continent, a planet. A human microbiome is all the writhing forms on and inside this body, drafted under our life. We are not me. We are we. Call us what we carry. There you go. So think about life all over the all over the place, and life that's going on in the spring here. This is from a poem by Amanda Gorman, and the book is called "Call Us What We Carry." It was published in 2021, I believe. Yeah, it's been around for, and where I get all good things, I found that at the Ames Public Library. Yes. Well, we've been talking about wild green things and brown bread today. Let's kind of go over, besides that wonderful book of poetry, we talked about the book
Darina, D-A-R-I-N-A, Allen, Forgotten Skills of Cooking. And I have to say, if you want a reference for how things, you know, that's, it's...
How
it's,
to do.
Yeah, it's... I think at this point it's a little more fun than The Joy of Cooking, although one could have both, right? And the other book was The Midwest Medicinal Plants by Lisa M. Rose.
That one also is very useful and lovely. And we, in a bit from our archives, we referred to the book Eating Wildly, Foraging for Life, Love, and the Perfect Meal by Ava Chin. We talked about motherwort to start the show out today. So thanks for joining us today, and think about spring. I've got a few upcoming things I want to mention. The Mustard Seed Community Farm, just north of Ames here, there we had mustard seed folks on our show a couple
month ago or so,
but now they're hard at it because it is spring. There is so much happening. Plants are popping, the frogs are peeping, and there's
really,
so
and
much.
A few weeks until we have the first farmer's market.
Oh, yeah. First farmer's market.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Oh, believe it or not, Saturday, May 11th, Ames Downtown
Farmers Market. Oh, not till the 11th. Okay, good to know.
Ames Downtown Farmers Market on Main Street. And so that look for the first bits of spring happening there. And on the farm, on Alice McGarry out there says there's so much work to do, and they appreciate and actually make wonderful use of volunteers. So they have planting days, they have harvest days, there's so much going on, and you can be a volunteer out there too, and you can get on their list of things. You can RSVP to Alice at mustardseedbee@gmail.com for workings, all different, there's different time slots and different things to do.
I expect you could learn a lot about gardening by joining that activity.
Alice and all her folks out there can teach you a lot, and it's a fun thing too. So think of spring, think of work days in the garden, and work days in somebody else's garden. It's a little, you can kind of just go home and sort of forget
it. About it, yeah. Not much commitment, just to just show up for a few hours. But.
So thanks, Mustard Seed Farm. And there's some upcoming things that they are involved in, and everybody is involved. At the Ames Public Library, they've had these before. April 27th, there's a seed and plant share. Go in and swap things. They'll have a seed library and people to talk about plants, bring
right,
plants to share.
You check the seeds out.
and pay overdues on there. No, there's a good thing happening. April 27th at the Ames Public Library. At the same time, there is the Ames Repair Cafe.
Oh, those are on the same day. Oh, good.
So come and
bring
learn.
In your broken stuff.
People like to help. So there you go. There you go. And Saturday, May 18th will be another... Ames will be another annual plant share, and this is a big time for doing plant swapping in the yard of the Romero House, 709 Clark Avenue, downtown Ames. And that's good. That's good. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We've been talking about wild green things today. Enjoy spring. Oh, yes, yes. You can find the Donalana Kitchen right here on your community radio station, live at noon on Tuesday, repeated 7 p.m. in the evening, or we have a podcast, too. Music today by the Barnell Band. You heard the tune Moon Coin Jig, and we'll go out with more Barnell Band stuff. Yeah. My name is Lana Nachtigler.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.